Then maybe make some joke about something visual that would be almost impossible not to react to, like some starlet's muff, for instance. Then maybe a joke about what might cause hysterical deafness. Goldberg. Very good. Will do. Let's focus on the intros. Lehner. Okay. Let me read through the intro again. What would really happen if a junior mint fell inside someone during surgery, as in the infamous Seinfeld episode? We're not sure that we can answer this one with any scientific references, and there probably isn't a hospital that would allow you to study the consequences of leaving movie candy inside a patient during surgery. This is not to say that surgeons don't occasionally leave things behind. Surgical sponges and instruments are the most common items left behind, and believe us, it has happened. In the Seinfeld episode, the patient makes a miraculous recovery, and it is implied that the mint may have prevented infection. Although there are some reports about using granulated sugar and honey on wounds, having a junior mint inside your body is more likely to cause an infection. So remember to always ask your surgeon to step out of the operating room if he or she needs a snack. Is it dangerous to eat another human being? One of Mark Lehner's favorite recent news stories is that of Armin Meiwes, a German computer technician who was convicted of murdering someone for sexual pleasure and then eating him over the next several months. Mr. Meiwes had advertised on the internet for well-built young men aged 18 to 30 to slaughter. Mr. Meiwes, in interviews with court psychiatrists, said that his fantasies of cannibalism began as a child from watching horror films. For those film buffs who are looking for a viewing list, these movies all involve cannibalism. Alive, Eating Raoul, The Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal, The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, and Night of the Living Dead. So, is it dangerous to eat another human being? I am sad to report that it really isn't that dangerous. Human flesh holds much nutritional value and will keep you alive if your plane goes down and all you have are your fellow more unfortunate passengers, unless you are eating the brain. A rare disease called kuru can occur from eating human brains, which killed about 10% of the Fore, a New Guinea tribe of cannibals. The Fore would honor their dead by eating them. The brain was reserved for the female relatives and children. Whole villages were wiped out by this rare neurodegenerative disease. Kuru manifests with muscle weakness and trouble walking. The Fore would then have trouble talking and could no longer stand, sit, or even hold their heads up. Death ultimately resulted from starvation or an infection that developed when they became so sick. Researchers were very interested in this disease because it is very similar to mad cow disease. 12:40 p.m. Goldberg. Time really flies when you are typing away at this IM thing. Lehner, are you being sarcastic? Goldberg. No. How was the lamb your mother-in-law made last night? Lehner, the goat, you mean. It was great. I love goat, and all things goat. Goldberg, I made a mean beef tenderloin last night. Lehner, meat, cheese, milk, etc. How'd you make it? Goldberg, in a red wine sauce, tender and delicious. Did I tell you that I added in your favorite story of that German cannibal? Lehner, that sounds great. 12:45 p.m. Lehner, I saw that. That's essential and indispensable for this book. Goldberg, what an insane story. Lehner, it's a lot more common than you think. Families tend to keep cannibalism hushed up. I had an uncle. Goldberg, I will never come to your families for Thanksgiving. Lehner, never mind. I was looking up satyriasis. Speaking of goats. Goldberg, what is satyriasis? Lehner, it comes from the word satyr, meaning part man, part goat. fond of Dionysian revelry, satyriasis, abnormal sexual craving in the male. 12:50 p.m. Goldberg says on the internet that it is caused by extreme narcissism. Lehner, really? I'm in the high-risk category, then. I can spend all day just staring at a single vein on my left bicep. Goldberg, there are treatment options available. Medication or... I assume that castration is not an option. Lehner, I'm not taking some horse suppository, son. Goldberg, maybe some very tight underwear? How many times can you be shot and still survive? At the end of Scarface, Tony Montana gets shot many times, but doesn't lose his ability to spew obscenities. In the hospital, we believe that an innocent person will get killed by a single gunshot, but the meanest, guiltiest thug can survive multiple gunshots and simply get up, curse at the doctors, and walk out. The truth is that it really depends on where the bullet hits you. Is there such a thing as a werewolf? It happened in An American Werewolf in London, and who can forget Michael J. Fox as Teen Wolf? Lycanthropy refers to the delusion that one is a wolf. This can definitely be seen in psychiatric illness, but it may be that in some cases, this is not a delusion at all. The werewolf legend may have originated out of two medical conditions. Porphyria is a rare hereditary blood disease. There are two types of porphyria. In one type, cutaneous porphyria, the symptoms can resemble the characteristics of a werewolf. These patients become extremely sensitive to sunlight, grow excessive amounts of hair, and develop sores, scars, and discolored skin. Porphyria also leads to tightening of the skin around the lips and gums and can make the incisors stand out. Think fangs. Another disease that may have contributed to the werewolf myth is congenital hypertrichosis universalis, sometimes known as human werewolf syndrome. This is another rare genetic disorder that is characterized by excessive hair growth over the whole body, including the face. If you travel to Austria, you can see portraits of the first family discovered with this condition in Ambras Castle near Innsbruck. So there isn't really such a thing as a werewolf, but there is a possible medical explanation of how the stories began. Sorry, we don't have a medical explanation for Dracula, Frankenstein, or the Abominable Snowman, but we'll do some research and include it in our next book, Why Are Women Smarter? Can you really explode from eating too much? In Monty Python's The Meaning of Life, a man eats a massive feast, but one wafer-thin dinner mint puts him over the edge. He explodes all over the restaurant. With the obesity epidemic in our country, we have a great deal to worry about, but don't expect to see people exploding at McDonald's. People won't explode from overeating, but if you eat too many Big Macs, you can rupture your stomach. Stomach rupture, or gastrorexis, is a rare condition, although it has been reported to occur from eating too much. In a 2003 issue of Legal Medicine, Japanese scientists Ishikawa et al. Reported the case of a 49-year-old man who was found dead in a public restroom after his stomach exploded from eating too much. There is no mention of what his Last Supper was, and therefore no reason to suspect Pop Rocks and Coke, a subject we will soon discuss. Do people ever have webbed hands and feet like the man from Atlantis? Does anyone else remember the man from Atlantis? Patrick Duffy, Bobby Ewing from Dallas, played the last man from the legendary underwater city of Atlantis. He had webbed feet and hands and gills instead of lungs. This fantastic show only lasted for one season, but it inspired a TV junkie to ask if people could really have webbed hands and feet. The answer is yes. People can have webbed hands and feet, Actually, it is more common than you may think, occurring anywhere from 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 2,000 births. There are two types of webbing. Syndactyly is when two fingers or toes are fused or webbed. Polydactyly involves the webbing of more than two fingers or toes. We all start life with hands and feet that resemble a duck, and between the 6th and 8th week of development, our fingers and toes separate. The failure of this separation is what leaves you looking like the man from Atlantis. Why do you see stars when you are hit in the head? It always happened to Wile E. Coyote. The roadrunner drops an anvil on his head, and then the poor coyote sees stars circling his head. Not only does this happen in cartoons, but it is actually a sign of a concussion. A concussion is simply when an injury to the head causes your brain to move around inside your skull. As for the stars, what probably happens is that the portion of your brain that is responsible for visual information, the occipital lobe, bangs up against the side of the skull. What was wrong with the boy in The Boy in the Plastic Bubble? In 1976, 1 year before John Travolta was dancing his way through Saturday Night Fever, he was in The Boy in the Plastic Bubble. The film was based on a true story of a boy suffering from a rare inherited disease called Severe Combined Immunodeficiency Disease, or SCID. SCID is now often referred to as Bubble Boy Disease, thanks to this cinematic tour de force. Severe Combined Immunodeficiency is a life-threatening syndrome in which there is a deficit in the white blood cells that protect us from infection. This lack of a functioning immune system leads to frequent severe infections. Patients are usually diagnosed before they are 3 months old, and if untreated, the syndrome can be fatal. New treatments, such as stem cell or bone marrow transplantation, can save many patients. Gene therapy now also shows promise as a treatment for one type of this syndrome. After some of his more recent movies, John Travolta has been rumored to have been photographed by paparazzi attempting to re-enter the bubble. Good idea. Chapter 8. Old Wives' Tales. It's now 4 a.m., and people are drunk, bloated, and exhausted. Lehner is recovering from his Academy Award performance and has his tongue inside the tequila bottle, trying to extract every last drop. He removes his mouth from the bottle and says, "The tongue is God's gift to the human race, the ultimate organ of poetry and pleasuring." Lehner goes on to say, "The lingua, blessed instrument of storytelling that allows me to continue the tradition of the oral urban legend." Jeremy, still stinging from his loss in charades, confronts Lehner and says, "I am so sick of all your stories. My tongue tells me that you should kiss my ass." Although it's late for most, nothing motivates Lehner more than verbal provocation. He responds with glee, "Ah, Jeremy, in medieval times, kissing the ass of a fool's sister was said to cure acne. Have you noticed how clear my skin is lately? Thank your sister for me." Jeremy leaps at Lehner, and the two of them tumble around the floor in a grunting adolescent flurry of fists and fury. They roll toward the living room, and Lehner, although in a seemingly suffocating headlock, is still able to continue his grand historical survey of old wives' tales. The Visigoths believed that eating juniper berries would make them strong for battle. Jeremy tries to silence Lehner with a jab to the throat, but in a hoarse voice, Lehner adds, "All it did was cause excessive flatulence." Urban legends and folklore can be the cause of tremendous uncertainty. People often desperately want the record set straight on some of these common myths. So, here you go. Is it true that you have to wait a half hour after eating to go swimming? As a child, No time seemed longer than the time spent waiting to jump back in the water after a meal. This half hour in hell is not based on science, but rather on the minds of nervous parents. There's absolutely no medical evidence that supports waiting 30 minutes before getting back in the pool. Digestion begins immediately when you put food in your mouth. But once the food arrives in your stomach, it takes about 4 hours to process there completely. Food then passes into the small intestine, where it spends another 2 hours, and then on to the large intestine for another 14. These times vary widely depending on what you eat, so don't set your watch by it. This doesn't mean that it's safe to eat 12 hamburgers and then try to swim the English Channel. Use your head and listen to signals from your body. If you feel pain, cramping, or severe fatigue when swimming, get out. And please, don't puke in the pool. Will staring at an eclipse make you go blind? Things to avoid staring at: a woman's cleavage, a large facial mole, a couple making out in public, the sun. The answer to this question is that you probably will not go blind, but staring at an eclipse can indeed cause harm. The eclipse of the sun on August 11, 1999, put many people at risk of solar retinopathy. Solar retinopathy is the fancy name for damage to the back of the eye caused when radiation from the sun is concentrated by the lens onto the retina. This radiation causes a burn. Solar retinopathy has been studied in medical literature, and surprisingly, the damage it causes is not as severe as previously thought. A group of researchers in the United Kingdom studied 40 people who experienced eye problems after the August 11, 1999 solar eclipse. It was found that only half suffered from eye discomfort. Only 20% of the group of 40 reported some damage 7 months after the eclipse. These were people who looked directly at the eclipse. It is unclear if these same patients were also staring at cleavage, moles, or amorous couples. Should you starve a fever and feed a cold? Or is it feed a fever and starve a cold? Or should you just curl up on the couch, whine like a baby, and call your mommy? Either way, the answer is no. But there may be some science behind this old wives' tale. In a study in clinical and diagnostic laboratory immunology, cell biologists in the Netherlands found that starving and feeding affect the immune system in different ways. Scientists looked at healthy volunteers and measured certain chemical messengers in their blood. After a meal, the average level of the chemical that stimulates the body's defense against infections increased by 450%. So you should feed a cold and a fever, right? Not so fast. Other volunteers, after starving, had high concentrations of another chemical, one that is also associated with the production of antibodies. So the answer is confusing, because it seems as though both starving and feeding a cold or fever can help the immune system. Like many areas of science, there is no absolutely clear answer here. Our recommendation is that whether you have a cold or a fever, your body needs fluid, rest, and nourishment. If you've lost your appetite, try to drink plenty of fluids and eat whatever healthy food appeals to you. And if in doubt, whine like a baby and call your mommy. Does wet or cold weather cause a cold? A friend once called to ask if she could have caught a cold from touching a goat at a petting zoo. This is not a common question, but many people do ask if any of the following things can cause a cold: sleeping in front of an open window, getting a chill, sleeping in front of a fan, getting caught in the rain, sleeping with a wet goat in front of a fan in the rain. The answer is no. Cold or wet weather does not cause a cold, but nobody seems to want to accept this. The common cold is caused by a virus. These viruses are everywhere, and it is difficult to avoid them. When you are exposed to someone who has a cold, you are more likely to get ill yourself. So be careful about close contact and definitely wash your hands. Not getting enough sleep or eating poorly can also reduce your resistance to infection. Remember that antibiotics won't fight your everyday cold. Antibiotics work only against bacteria. To take care of a cold, rest, eat well, and a little chicken soup couldn't hurt. Can you die from chasing Pop Rocks with Coke? From penicillin to Post-its, accidental discoveries have led to many of our most important products. That is how we've come to have Pop Rocks. Pop Rocks were accidentally invented in 1975 by William Mitchell, a scientist at General Foods. Mitchell was trying to design an instant soft drink when he mixed sugar flavoring and carbon dioxide in his mouth. His startling discovery may or may not have led to the demise of Mikey, the boy from the Life cereal commercials, who, as the urban legend goes, liked mixing Coke and Pop Rocks. Supposedly, this deadly mix caused his stomach to rupture. In 1983, Pop Rocks were taken off the market, but recently have come back into fashion like Razzles, Sugar Babies, Charleston Chews, and other retro candy. You should have no problem finding Pop Rocks for your home science experiments. You will surely find that there is no danger in the delicious combination of soda and Pop Rocks. As for Mikey, he is alive and well and living in post-child star obscurity. As for other child stars, we offer these dramatic gastrointestinally induced death rumors. 1. Gary Coleman, different strokes. From snorting Lick-A-Made and drinking fizzies. 2. Danny Bonaducci, the Partridge Family, from ingesting the marshmallows from 30 boxes of Lucky Charms. 3. Aaron Moran, Happy Days, from choking on Razzles while intoxicated from drinking excessive amounts of Clamato. Can lip balm be addictive? When you search the internet these days, you realize that some people have far too much time on their hands. Conspiracy theorists seem to have it out for many commercial products. Websites claim that lip balm manufacturers lace their products with addictive substances, and lip balm companies use the internet to refute these claims. Lip balms may be habit-forming, but they certainly aren't addictive. Carmex, which has been accused of containing acid and ground-up fiberglass, contains salicylic acid, which is closely related to aspirin. The salicylic acid works as a pain reliever and as a drying agent, but is not addictive. Chapstick contains white petrolatum, or petroleum jelly, lanolin, a wool grease, and Patamate O, sunscreen. Nothing addictive there either. Is it true that left-handed people are smarter than right-handed people? First, we must state that we are right-handed. Second, Billy's wife is left-handed. Mark's wife is ambidextrous and must use both hands to keep him in line. Medical literature is filled with studies on the effect of right or left-handedness on oral hygiene, depression, immune function, schizophrenia, enuresis or bedwetting, longevity, language, asthma, allergies, and injury. The list continues, but none of the evidence is very clear. In general, the right side of our brain receives input from and controls the left side of our body, and vice versa. Therefore, right-handed people are usually said to be left-brain dominant, and left-handers, right-brain dominant. Each brain hemisphere is known to have specialized abilities. The right brain is responsible for visual and spatial skills, while the left controls language and speech. Again, this does not always hold true. Neuropsychologists have tried to test for intelligence differences between lefties and righties, but have found no significant results. Males are about 1.5 to 2 times more likely to be left-handed than are females. There is no scientific evidence about why this occurs, but Mark postulates an evolutionary explanation. Males have developed their left hands to accommodate ambidextrous masturbation. Will sleeping in front of a fan or an open window cause a stiff neck? Unless you are sleeping beneath an industrial fan that causes your head to wiggle like a bobblehead doll, there should be no problem. This old wives' tale has no scientific basis. Do microwaves cause cancer? This morning I microwaved the milk for my coffee, and a few hours later I heated up some lasagna for lunch. If what you read on the internet is true, I should have about 12 more hours to live. But no studies have proven modern microwave usage to be harmful. Much of the fear about the cancer-causing agents of microwaves has to do with radiation. Basically, anything that moves is radiation, including visible light, ultraviolet rays, X-rays, and microwaves. Ionizing radiation, such as X-rays, have enough localized energy to do chemical damage to the molecules they hit. Non-ionizing radiation, such as microwaves, do not damage molecules. One possible danger with microwaves is that heated products can explode even after they are removed from the microwave. Exploding eggs are specifically dangerous. Many injuries have been reported, and some doctors in the United Kingdom have even pressed for warning labels. Will using a cell phone give you a brain tumor? Wireless phones, including cell phones, use radio frequency energy, also known as radio waves. It is not believed that wireless phones are harmful, but the research in this arena has only been conducted recently, so the real negative effects of cell phone usage remain unknown for now. Will a plate in your head set off a metal detector in the airport? This question makes me think of the scene from High Anxiety when Mel Brooks, playing Dr. Richard Thorndike, passes through airport security with a gun. As the metal detector beeps, he bursts out, "Is this a game show? What did I win, a Pinto? I beeped. Take me away. Take me back to Russia. I beeped. The mad beeper is loose." If you have a titanium plate in your head, a pacemaker, plates and screws for a broken bone, or an artificial implant, this too could happen to you. The size of the implant and the sensitivity of the device will determine whether you are turned into the mad beeper. Don't worry, the metal detector won't hurt you. Is it dangerous to hold in a sneeze? The old wives' tale warns us that if you hold in a sneeze, your head might explode. That won't happen, but you can do yourself some harm. A sneeze is a very complicated thing that involves many areas of the brain. A sneeze is a reflex triggered by sensory stimulation of the membranes in the nose, resulting in a coordinated and forceful expulsion of air through the mouth and nose. The Guinness Book of World Records reports the longest sneezing bout ever recorded was that of a schoolgirl from the United Kingdom. She started sneezing on January 13th, 1981, and didn't stop sneezing for 978 days. The air expelled by sneezes is said to travel up to 100 miles per hour, and an unimpeded sneeze sends 2,000 to 5,000 bacteria-filled droplets into the air. Holding in a sneeze potentially can cause fractures in the nasal cartilage, nosebleeds, burst eardrums, hearing loss, vertigo, detached retinas, or temporary swelling called facial emphysema. Therefore, it is best to let your sneeze fly, but please cover your nose and mouth. Can you swallow your tongue? Several years ago at the Columbus Circle entrance to Central Park, I came upon someone having a seizure in the street. As I attempted to help the patient, someone from the crowd reached into the nearby garbage can and insisted that I stick the dirty spoon he had found into the person's mouth to keep him from swallowing his tongue. The guy with the spoon didn't seem to be impressed with my medical degree and politely told me that I didn't know what the, insert vulgar New York expression here, I was talking about. This is not an uncommon belief, but it is not possible to swallow your tongue. The tongue can block the opening of the airway, and one of the first things that you are taught in basic life support is that if someone is having difficulty breathing, you should tilt his or her head and lift the chin. This helps to remove the tongue as an obstruction. If you do come upon someone who is having a seizure, just make sure that he is safe and won't hurt himself. Do not put a bacteria-covered spoon in the mouth. Call for help, and before you know it, the seizure will probably stop on its own. Chapter 9. Getting Older. I can't believe it's not over yet. I feel as though this evening has taken years off my life. Lena and Jeremy have been separated, and there are only a few stragglers left picking at the remnants of Eloise's glorious buffet. Even Lena seems beaten down from a combination of toxic tequila, amorous adventures, and verbal violence. He is leaning on the credenza and says to me as he agonizingly stretches his neck, "I used to be able to drink, womanize, and brawl and come out of it all as fresh as a daisy. Now I feel limp and shriveled like a rotting clump of stinkweed." Lehner stands and arches his back uncomfortably. "Did I mention my prostate feels a little swollen?" With that, I turn and exit the party. There are many advantages to getting older. Early bird specials, senior citizen discounts, the fact that people don't ask you to help move a sofa up a flight of stairs, and getting away with saying whatever the hell pops into your head. But there are some perplexing changes ahead for all of us. Instant messaging. 5:33 p.m. Goldberg. "Maestro." Lena. "Hey, you. Give me 5 minutes, at most. Go get something. Then we'll work." Goldberg. "Surely." 5:45 p.m. Lena. "You there?" Goldberg. "Yes, sir." Lena. "What should we do?" 5:50 p.m. Goldberg. "Light this piece of shit on fire and go drink ourselves silly." Lena. "Brilliant idea." Goldberg. "Or we can talk about the health alert that I just received about Mycobacterium bovis in U.S.-born children." Lena. "What the hell is that?" Goldberg. "You are so filled with all this medical knowledge, I was hoping you could fill me in." "I'm waiting." Lena. "What is it, some mushroom thing, some fungal thing? Some fungal cow thing?" Goldberg. "You're getting warm with the cow." "Sounds perverse. Give up?" Lena. "I give up." Goldberg. "Similar to TB, Mycobacterium tuberculosis." 5:55 p.m. Lena. "Duh. Should have known that." Goldberg. "Infection that you can get from the milk of infected cattle, unpasteurized cheese and stuff." Lena. "People should just drink cow's blood, like the Maasai. That would solve the problem of mycobacterium and lactose intolerance." Goldberg. "You should run the Department of Health." Lena. "Thank you." Goldberg. "And Homeland Security." Lena. "Homeland Senility." Goldberg. "We have to finish this book first." Is it true that you lose taste buds as you get older? You finally have time and money to relax, travel, and have a good meal. The bad news is you probably can barely taste the meal. Starting at age 45, taste buds begin to lose much of their sensitivity. Older people often lose their ability to sense bitter or salty flavors altogether. You start your life with about 9,000 taste buds, and in old age, you have less than half of that. You want some more bad news? Aging also causes decreased hearing, sight, smell, and touch. Why does hair turn gray? All the hairs on our head contain pigment cells that contain melanin. Pigment cells in our hair follicles gradually die as we age. The decrease in melanin causes the hair to become a more transparent color, like gray, silver, or white. Premature gray hair is hereditary, but it has also been associated with smoking and vitamin deficiencies. Early onset of gray hair, from birth to puberty, can be associated with medical syndromes, including dyslexia. A more interesting question is why old ladies insist on trying to cover up their gray hair with bright blue hair dye. Why do you shrink as you get older? Some of us don't have a lot of inches to lose. In height, that is. Unfortunately, we all will get a little shorter as we age. This takes place over many years, and ultimately, we all lose an inch or so. Gravity is responsible for some of this height loss. You lose muscle and fat as you age, and gravity weighs down, especially on the bones in your spine, and may cause compression. This explains why all those senior drivers in Florida can barely see over the dashboard. Why do old ladies grow beards? The easy answer would be to work in a carnival, but it is actually not that simple. At menopause, the ratio of male hormones, or androgens, to estrogen begins to change. This can produce mild increases in facial hair. The amount or thickness of facial hair is hereditary, and how thickly hair follicles are distributed throughout the skin is determined at birth. Some ethnic groups or nationalities are more likely to develop facial hair than others. Some medical conditions can cause excessive hair growth, so it is always wise to check with your doctor, especially if you are a woman experiencing 5 o'clock shadow. Do your ears continue to grow after the rest of your body stops growing? Prince Charles may worry about this very question. There are definitely some changes in the face that occur with aging. First, some facial muscle tone is lost, causing that saggy look. Then you get the dreaded double chin. The nose can also lengthen a bit, and the skin on the face becomes thin, dry, and wrinkled. Then there are longer, thicker eyebrows and gray hair. We haven't even mentioned droopy eyes, receding gums, missing teeth, and last but not least, bigger ears. Yes, your ears do continue to grow as you age, but only slightly. This is probably due to cartilage growth. What a list of wonderful things to look forward to as we enter our golden years. Why do you need less sleep when you get older? Actually, you do not need less sleep as you get older. The body's sleep requirements remain constant throughout our lives. The average total sleep time, however, actually increases slightly after age 65. This sounds like something to be excited about, but not really. The problem is that as you age, you have more difficulty falling asleep. Sleep for the elderly is also interrupted by such factors as leg cramps, sleep apnea, and medical or psychiatric illness. Normal sleep consists of two major states, REM, or rapid eye movement sleep, and NREM, non-REM sleep. NREM sleep is divided further into four sleep stages. A healthy night's rest is generally comprised of 20% REM and 80% NREM. As you age, this distribution is changed. What's up with the ear hair? You lose the hair where you want it, and gain it in all those other unsightly places. Bushy eyebrows, excessive nasal hair, and hairy ears certainly don't make you anxious to get older, do they? Sometimes the excessive growth of hair in the ears is genetic and is linked to the Y chromosome, the sex chromosome found only in males, which explains why you don't see many hairy-eared females, except in the Lord of the Rings movies. And what would this excessive hair growth be without a competition? The Guinness Book of World Records record for the longest ear hair was broken again in 2002. A 70-year-old from Tamil Nadu State in India, Anthony Victor, broke the record with his ear hair measuring 11.5 centimeters. Do your nails or hair grow after you die? Human nails and hair do not grow after death. The fact of the matter is that after you die, your body starts to dry out, creating the illusion that your hair and nails are still growing as the rest of you shrivels up. What are age spots? Age spots are also known as sunspots or lentigines. They are flat, brown discolorations of the skin that usually occur on the back of the hands, neck, and face of people older than 40 years of age. Age spots are caused by an increased number of pigment-producing cells in the skin. As our skin becomes thinner with age, it also becomes more translucent, which makes these spots more obvious. Age spots are caused by the skin being exposed to the sun over many years and are a sign of sun damage. They are not harmful and do not represent skin cancer. Is lifespan determined strictly by genetics? How we age as individuals is a complex interaction of genetic and environmental factors. There have been many studies that try to assess how much of our longevity is determined by our genes. Scientists have known for several years that people who live the longest often have children who also have long lifespans. The lifespans of adoptees seem to be more closely correlated to those of their birth parents than to those of their adoptive parents. One study of twins reared apart suggests about a 30% role for heredity in lifespan, but others say that the influence is even smaller. Recent research seems to indicate that the process of aging and lifespan may be determined by your mother's X chromosome. Incessant maternal nagging, however, could reverse any beneficial genetics. More IMing. Laner. I spoke to my grandmother last night, but she thought I was her son, my uncle. So I had the conversation with her as my uncle. Goldberg. Deceptive, but useful. Laner. It was simpler than disabusing her of the mistaken identity. Goldberg. How old is she now? Laner. 96. I'm going to be 49 on Tuesday. Goldberg. I can't imagine you as a 96-year-old. Laner. Feels like I'm teetering on the precipice of something major. 11:40 a.m. Goldberg. What? The publication of this masterpiece? Do you have plans for Tuesday? Laner. Yes, we should start writing Nobel acceptance speeches now. I just booked a ticket for Stockholm on Travelocity. This book will do for us what the little red book did for Mao. Speaking of not going gently into that good night, Mao is my model for groovy aging. Goldberg. That's the first time I've heard Mao and groovy in the same sentence. Laner. Smoked 5 packs a day, never brushed his teeth, just rinsed with green tea, and cavorted every night with 3 or 4 young Red Guard hoochie girls. Goldberg. I never knew he was such a player. He probably would have loved to party with Kim Jong-il. 11:45 a.m. Laner. Mao got more action in a week than Kim Jong-il will have in a lifetime. Goldberg. Those were the days, my friend. Laner. Our next book should be The Sex Lives of Asian Despots. Goldberg. We need a catchy title like Despots and Sexpots. Laner, that's pretty good. Maybe we should just call this book Despots and Sexpots. Can taking vitamin C help you live longer? Dr. Linus Pauling, a 2-time Nobel Prize winner, took high doses of vitamin C for almost 40 years and died at the ripe old age of 93. He believed that his life was prolonged for 20 years because of his high vitamin C intake. Sounds great, and Pauling certainly makes a valid argument, but unfortunately, there isn't any strong evidence to support this claim. Vitamin C and vitamin E, often referred to as antioxidant vitamins, have been suggested to prevent cell damage in humans, thereby lowering the risk of certain chronic diseases, including high blood pressure, stroke, and asthma. Many studies have tried to prove this, but with no obvious results. Very few side effects exist with vitamin C, so there is no major downside to adding a vitamin C supplement to your daily regimen, though occasional reports of nausea, heartburn, gas, or diarrhea are noted with higher doses. A more prudent approach is to eat a balanced diet, including fruits and vegetables, and avoid dangerous activities like smoking. Is there such a thing as male menopause? The concept of male menopause and the need for hormone replacement therapy as a treatment is a highly controversial topic. The many names that are used to describe these changes in an aging male include andropause, viropause, male climacteric, ADAM, androgen decline in the aging male syndrome, aging male syndrome, or AMS, or late onset hypogonadism. Some wives prefer to call it a midlife crisis. Even though we don't like to admit it, they may be right. Male menopause is thought to be due to a decrease in testosterone. In contrast to the female menopause, the process in men is characterized by slow onset and slow progression. There is a progressive reduction in testicular function in men between the ages of 25 and 75. During this time, the amount of available testosterone can fall by almost 50%. This is not a fixed number, and there is a great deal of variation among individual men. The symptoms of this syndrome are lethargy or fatigue, depression, increased irritability, mood swings, decrease in lean muscle, increase in fat, decreased libido, and difficulty in attaining and sustaining erections. Many men now receive treatment with testosterone and report improved symptoms. There is a downside to this treatment, as it can increase the risk of prostate cancer and arterial sclerosis. Many experts believe that this syndrome is more likely to be the result of non-hormonal explanations or the normal aging process. Lifestyle factors such as alcohol and drug use, medications, marital problems, financial problems, and stress in general all may have a role. Doesn't sound much different than a midlife crisis. 11:15 a.m. Laner. I'm going to give my daughter some Benadryl, and I'll be right there. Be right back. Goldberg, okay. So you medicate your daughter in order to get work done? 11:20 a.m. Laner, how dare you suggest such a thing? Pharmacoparenting. Goldberg, a little Benadryl beats a little Ritalin. What, are you too offended to respond? Laner, I'm stretching to gear up for this session. Goldberg, I am having a cup of coffee and trying to jumpstart my lethargic body. I can't believe I have to work 4 to 12. Laner, how are you feeling? Any better? 11:25 a.m. Goldberg, tired. Didn't sleep all that much. Just getting old, I guess. Male menopause. Laner, shouldn't old people sleep better, sort of like dry runs for death? Goldberg, manopause. Laner, I think I'm getting younger from the neck down and rapidly achieving senescence from the neck up. Goldberg, please, just stay above the waist. It's too early to hear anything more. Laner, how come lawyers never use male menopause as a mitigating defense? Goldberg, What? A hot flash causing road rage? 11:30 a.m. Lehner, a hot flash causing an otherwise rational person to decide that murder makes more practical sense than divorce. Aren't we entering into a world in which old age homes will be populated with withered hags with enormous perfect boobs and hunched, drooling men struggling to haul their pec implants around the joint? Goldberg, both covered in faded tattoos that now resemble ancient cave paintings. Lehner, exactly. Goldberg, but at least the blue hair will seem somewhat funky rather than freaky. Or maybe not. Why are older people such bad drivers? Our population is aging. Persons 65 and older now represent about 12% of the total U.S. population. In 2050, there should be about 86.7 million seniors in the United States, comprising 21% of the total population. I hope that they aren't driving in front of me. Wait a minute. That is going to be me. It's true that older drivers are more likely to get in multiple vehicle accidents, more likely to get traffic citations, and more likely to get seriously injured in a crash than younger drivers. One theory is that they tend to overestimate their abilities and are less able to compensate for their mistakes. There are also some medical reasons that older drivers are less adept behind the wheel. First, seniors need to contend with common vision problems. Loss of visual acuity, especially night vision, is a problem, and even when corrected, there is usually still a loss of peripheral vision, contrast vision, and depth perception. Hearing loss makes drivers less likely to hear important cues, such as sirens, horns, or screeching tires, too. Restricted mobility, weakness, and decreased reaction time also contribute to driving problems. Is there really a wrinkle cure? The only way to prevent wrinkles is to avoid aging or to freeze yourself like Austin Powers. Otherwise, you will have to stick with sunscreen and moisturizers. To reduce or improve wrinkles, there are several options. Tretinoin, or Retin-A, is the only topical medication that has been clearly proven to improve wrinkles in controlled clinical studies. It is also the only FDA-approved medical treatment for this purpose. Tretinoin increases sensitivity to sunlight. Therefore, sun avoidance, protective clothing, and sunscreen are recommended when used. Side effects include peeling, dry skin, burning, itching, and redness. Hydroxyacids are also present in many over-the-counter creams, and there is some evidence that they may help with minor wrinkles. There is great variability in the amount and type of hydroxyacid in different products, and therefore variable efficacy. Other more drastic treatments include chemical peels and laser resurfacing. The short answer, though, is not really. Can aluminum cause Alzheimer's? If aluminum caused Alzheimer's, wouldn't the Tin Man have needed a brain rather than a heart? Aluminum intake is unavoidable. It comes primarily from food, drinking water, and pharmaceuticals like antacids. It occurs both naturally and as an additive. It also can leach into food from the pans we use. Aluminum has been linked with Alzheimer's disease since the 1960s. For almost every study in favor of a connection, there has been a study against it. Like many scientific theories, there remain many unanswered questions. The majority of scientists now believe that if aluminum plays any role in Alzheimer's at all, it is very small. What does this mean for us? It means we can relax. Aluminum is the third most common element in our world after oxygen and silicon, so it would be extremely difficult to entirely avoid aluminum. If you do choose to try and avoid aluminum, you can drink filtered water, avoid aluminum-containing antiperspirants, and be careful when cooking acidic or basic foods in aluminum-containing cookware. If you are going to be an anti-aluminum crusader, we hope that you will be consistent. There is nothing more annoying than people preaching to you about eating organic while they are smoking cigarettes. 12:55 p.m., the final IM. Goldberg, are you there? Shall we call it quits? Lehner, when I get sufficiently old and incontinent, I want to be taken to the doctor in one of those pet carrying cases like a cat and left there. Then I want to be boiled down and canned. My version of a pharaonic memorial instead of mummification. Canning. Goldberg. And then your entire family can keep a can of you on a back shelf next to the spam. Lehner. Exactly. A fitting tribute. That seems to wrap all this up. Aging, family, cannibalism, and the pursuit of health. Goldberg, we have come full circle.
We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio. For more information about the broad range of titles from Harper Audio, Harper Children's Audio, and Cadman, please visit our website at www.harperaudio.com. You can also call 1-800-331-3761. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.